by her own command. She grinned in the darkness, waiting.
"Maybe I am mad," she thought.
The shouts got louder. Footsteps followed them. Then light, as a small posse of Brotherhood members turned the corner from the stairwell into the corridor. At their head was Severon, grim-faced but not frightened, confident-looking.
"All the better for my plan," Zelda thought. "Let his arrogance be his downfall."
She sat up as he approached, but didn't move to stand.
"She's here," she said. "I told you she would come."
"Your niece will die on this night," Severon said, "and you will watch."
Zelda flinched. It was all an act.
"And me?"
"If your beasts perform as promised, your life will be spared."
"The Mammothen will march into battle, but not for you."
"Good. Then the outcome is all but determined."
"Arrogance. Foolishness. It is almost too easy."
The thought gave Zelda pause as she studied Severon's face, which was lined, but not with concern. Only his scars marred his expression.
"You will not win," she said,
remembering to play her part.
"The armored knight will mount your head on a spike."
The sellsword leader laughed.
"Perhaps, but I don't think so."
He turned on his heel and departed, his men falling into ranks behind him. Zelda watched the lights bob away before disappearing entirely. She listened to the night. The sounds of preparation, horses whinnying, men shouting out orders, steel clanking on steel. Though loud, this was the calm before the coming storm. Finally, drowning out all other noise, she heard thunder. Not real thunder, but the heavy footfalls of dozens of Mammothen marching into battle. Zelda placed two fingers between her lips, waiting a beat longer, one eyebrow cocked. And then she whistled a single command, long and clear, unmistakable. Anise.
"Frozen hell,"
Anise muttered.
"They hath Mammothen."
They were still a fair distance from the castle walls.
"I can't believe I'm in this situation again, having to retake my own castle once more."
And couldn't see much, but she could hear that familiar sound. Heavy. Rumbling across the uneven terrain, like thunder beneath the surface. The entire herd of tusked beasts, moving as one. Beside her, Terin gripped his morning star, the chain coiled around the handle, the spiked ball dangling in front of him.
"They are trained to defend the castle."
His white armor shone as he shifted his weight from foot to foot. Anise shook her head. That was the strange thing.
"No, they are trained to obey their masters. It would take months to retrain them to new masters, unless..."
Terin finished her sentence.
"They had help from one of their old masters."
It was the only thing that made a lick of sense. The Brotherhood must have spared the lives of one or more of the Mammothen masters.
"Frozen hell,"
she said again. This changed everything. One fully grown, trained Mammothen was as good as 100 soldiers. Archer raised an eyebrow.
"What hope do we have against Mammothen?"
It was the first time she'd ever heard such pessimism from her younger brother, who wore bravado and fearlessness like a fine coat.
"The sleeping knights will make up the difference," Terin said.
Anise shook her head, knowing it was a white lie, an attempt to calm her nerves.
"I will make up the difference."
The growl in his voice made her turn her head sharply to look at him, expecting to see that telltale darkness in his eyes. The one that meant he'd given himself over to the monster inside him. The one that turned his blood to ash, his bones to stone, his fists to hammers. Instead, she found him smiling. Archer laughed, recognizing it also. It was a jape, nothing more. Not yet.
"No,"
Terin's monster purred in her head.
"He is closed off, but I am knocking."
She started at the voice. In a way, she felt more connected to Terin now that she could hear that snake-like voice, those whispers in the dark, but she hadn't grown used to it, not fully. She wondered whether she ever would. Terin said,
"Don't listen to it. Slam the door. Focus on me."
She did, and the voice vanished. Swiveling, she checked that no one else had noticed the odd exchange. If anyone had, they didn't show it. Archer and Sir Jonas were conferring, discussing the minutiae of strategy. Dietrich was organizing his company of riders, barking out orders with the familiarity of a man having experienced countless battles. Sir Metz was doing the same with his women soldiers, but with less passion, more strictness. Their lines were perfect, their eyes trained forward, unblinking, reacting to his voice alone. His armor shone with hues of green and red in the moon's light. Apart from the others were the sleeping knights. They stamped their feet with unspent energy. Lisbeth Lorne stood before them, her real eyes closed, while the marking of a blue eye on her forehead blazed with light. Anise wondered what she was saying to them, where only they could hear.
"It must be enough. We must be enough. I can't lose another. Not her. Not Zelda."
That's when she noticed Archer had finished speaking with Jonas and was staring at her, a frown creasing his otherwise handsome face.
"Are you all right?" he mouthed.
"Yes,"
she mouthed back, though she wasn't certain it was true. The hopes of an entire kingdom hinged on a strange skin-marked girl she barely knew, a group of women soldiers who'd only seen one battle, and a ragtag company of soldiers numbering less than 100. Then again, against all odds, they'd won at Darin. She turned and raised her own weapon, the Evenstar, a gift from the same blacksmith, Fay, who had forged Terin's weapon and armor. She waited a moment for the soldiers and their commanders to quiet, focusing on her.
"Men, women, ancient knights," she said,
earning a smattering of laughter from the men. One or two women laughed, too, but were quickly silenced by a sharp stare from Sir Metz. The butt of the jape, the sleeping knights, ignored her, staring longingly at the castle walls. Anise knew they expected a long, drawn-out speech about honour and kingdom and crown and
"Kill the bloody sellswords!"
she shouted, lowering her weapon and turning to face her home.
"Nice," Terin said, digging his heels into his enormous horse. "Very concise."
"Sometimes less is more," she said,
bringing her own stallion into a trot beside him. All around them, hooves thundered, boots stomped, and the war cries began. Next came the arrows, falling like rain. Christoph. As the arrows fell amongst his troops, Christoph forced himself not to run through their ranks, trying to block each dart with his shield.
"You can't save them all," he reminded himself. "They are well trained. They can protect themselves."
Still, he kept one eye on Private Sheary. He was still trying to come to terms with the fact that she was Terin's cousin, watching as she deflected an arrow with her shield. Her positioning was perfect, just like he'd taught her, making herself a smaller target by holding the metal plate away from her body, in line with the downward angle of the projectiles.
"She's a fast learner," he thought,
feeling a warm swell of pride in his chest.
"Focus on the task at hand."
He blocked an arrow of his own, one that would have penetrated the steel grill of his face shield. His own training kicked in, and he gave the command for evasive maneuvers. He didn't need to look back to confirm that his company had obeyed the order, cutting a zigzagging path toward the white castle walls. On the right flank, his peripheral vision located the sleeping knights galloping ahead, their long strides almost rivaling that of the horses ridden by Dietrich's small force. Twice Christoph had requested that his soldiers be permitted to train with the ancient knights, and twice Lisbeth Lorne had informed him that the knights had rejected his request, a response that had perturbed him greatly. Slowly at first, but then swifter, the distance to the castle evaporated like dew under the morning sun. As he ran, Christoph reminded himself of his goals for this battle. First and foremost, support his troops and prevent loss of life. Second, help take the castle. And, a not-so-distant third, find Lady Zelda and save her. The gates loomed, and somewhere behind them a mammothen bellowed. Zelda. The nature of the shouts had changed. no longer commands, but distress, and Zelda could almost picture the sellswords diving aside as the mammothin herd, no longer confined, broke away from them, a stampede of heavy hooves and rage. Zelda smiled at the image, backing away from the wall, curling into a ball and covering her head with her arms, as the earthquake-like stomps got louder, louder, closer, closer, reverberating through the prison. The stone wall exploded inward, and Zelda closed her eyes, feeling a hail of small, sharp stones and larger, blunt stones ratchet off her body. The pain heightened her focus even more, and when she was certain the worst was over, she sprang to her feet with a litheness she hadn't felt in years. One of the mammothen stared at her with big brown eyes. Her favorite, Chantilly, a gentle giant to those she favored, and a monster from the hinterlands to those she despised. And because Zelda despised the Brotherhood, Chantilly would hate them too. A dozen other mammothen crowded behind her, like Zelda's own security force. Blood running down her neck and arms, Zelda strode forward, raising her hands to the sky, which she could now see, so Chantilly could pick her up with her powerful trunk, placing Zelda high atop her back, just behind her ears. Zelda whistled again, this time lower and shorter. As one, the mammothen released their cry, turning away from the rubble of the destroyed prison. Time for battle. Lisbeth. The knights had quickly outdistanced her, but Lisbeth was with them anyway. She heard their thoughts, a chaotic spill of coming violence and bloodlust. There were other ideas, too, more noble ones, like northern pride and honor and victory. But at the core of everything was the violence. The need for war, the insatiable thirst of a man dying alone in the desert. It was this desire that scared Lisbeth the most. Her soul mark burned like a candle on her forehead. She concentrated, trying to touch each of their minds in turn to rein them in. Some responded, slowing, falling back to wait for the other two companies to catch up. But most pushed back, mental shoves that knocked Lisbeth off balance, almost causing her to fall. She regained her balance, however, running toward that miasma of pulsing, beating souls that was her company of knights, and beyond, more than 100 souls of the enemy, as black as tar, dark souls who'd committed unspeakable acts against the innocent. "These are bad men," Lisbeth thought. "They deserve what is coming to them." She knew, however, that was just an excuse for the fact that she couldn't control the knights, no matter how hard she tried. Maybe the men they would kill on this night deserved to die, but what about the next people the knights killed, and the next? If she didn't find a way to hold them back now, she might never be able to later. "They will swarm the land south of the Mournful Mountains, killing all in the name of the North. This isn't my purpose." It isn't. She hated the bitter taste of the lie in her mouth. Ahead, amidst a hail of arrows, the knights threw themselves at the wall, not waiting for the battering ram to move into position against the gates. Instead, they climbed like spiders, their fingers finding small cracks between the wall's stones where the mortar had chipped away. Atop the wall, the archers redoubled their efforts, shooting straight down. Arrows deflected off armor and shield, and the knights climbed higher. Her breath left her as one fell, and she felt the air whooshing around her, felt the fear of dying, felt the crunch of his body against the cold, hard ground. She collapsed, her dress coiling around her like a wind-blown shawl. She panted, her heart beating rapidly in her chest, then slowing, slowing, stopping. "Wait, am I dead?" But no, her heart was beating wildly at the same time, even as it had stopped. "Different hearts," she thought. "I'm feeling all of them at once." One, however, had died. "They can die." Somehow that thought gave her solace. Somehow it scared her. She regained her feet, the pain gone. The arrows had ceased. Where are the archers? Fear racing through her, Lisbeth Lorne ran for the wall, which had already been taken by the knights. Not a single dark soul was left alive on the ramparts. Anise. Anise's eyes met Terin's. He wore a grim look of determination, which she suspected mirrored her own. They were on opposite sides of the battering ram, a medium-sized felled tree stripped of leaves and branches. As they shoved it forward, retracted it, and shoved again, each blow reverberated through her hands, sending shockwaves up her arms. Somewhere along the way, the arrows had stopped falling.
"The sleeping knights," she thought. "They are a dangerous force."
Another thud, and another. Archer yelled something as they pushed in unison once more. The next impact earned a cracking sound, splinters protruding like a porcupine's quills. The next two blows were enough to break through the heavy wood of the crossbar, the door exploding inward to reveal a snarling army of career sellswords already doing battle against an army so ancient they would have been right at home on display in a museum. Still, the Brotherhood were holding their own. Several of the knights were even dead or injured on the ground. Dozens of sellswords were down, too, the cost of defeating the ancient foe. She charged forward, bringing her Evenstar into a tight orbit over her head. Terran's weapon was spiraling too, and as they met the waiting enemy, they unleashed their spiked balls as one. Terran's aim was true, bludgeoning an enemy soldier in the face, mangling his iron mask, and throwing him back like a stuffed dummy on the practice field. Anise's target ducked, the metal projectile narrowly missing his helmet. The momentum of her swing carried her forward, and she brought a knee up into his jaw, rocking him back. Still, he was a seasoned warrior, and even off balance, he attempted to impale her on his sword. Luckily, it was a glancing blow, her armor protecting her with a shriek as the blade scraped past. All around her there was mayhem, both sides' ranks broken, all semblance of structure and command gone in the heat of the battle. In short, it was a street fight. And street fights happened to be Anise's specialty. She grinned and threw herself into the fray. Zelda. Chantilly and the other Mammuthen rampaged across the castle grounds, tearing trees up by their roots, smashing walls, bursting through hastily closed gates like they were wet paper pulled from the royal streams. Several bold members of the Brotherhood tried to stop them, standing bravely in their path, firing arrows or throwing spears. They might as well have been tossing nuts and berries for all the good it did. A chorus of trumpets preceded the squishing of hooves on corpses as the men were trampled. For one, Chantilly lowered her head and gored the enemy soldier through the ribs, bucking her head and tossing him aside. He landed in the branches of a pine tree, slumped across the bed of nettles as if he might be sleeping. He was not sleeping. Zelda turned her attention forward once more, gathering her bearings. Just ahead, the wide courtyard funneled into a narrow corridor with a gate at the end. Beyond that was the outer courtyard and the main castle gates, where sounds of battle could be heard. With a dozen Mammuthen flanking the sellswords, the outcome would be determined swiftly. Zelda frowned, noticing something strange as Chantilly entered the corridor at full charge, her leathery skin nearly scraping the white stone walls on either side. The ground was covered in a thick layer of straw. Which wouldn't be odd if this was the stables or the cow pastures. Here in the promenade, however.
Severon is an arrogant bastard, but he's no fool.
Sudden dread filled her, and she pressed her lips together to whistle the short, sharp command to halt. But she never released that whistle, feeling a jolt as Chantilly's forelegs dipped down into the first hole hidden by the straw. Zelda was wrenched from the beast's back, going airborne, somersaulting head over feet.
Chantilly,
she thought as she flew. Kristoff. Two dead so far. Another member of his company fell, the third since the battle began. The sight sent a bolt of pain through him, but Kristoff clenched his teeth and pushed on, carving a path between where the knights and Sir Dietrich's company fought. His soldiers were relentless, like wildcats, using the advantage wrought by their three-pronged attack to pounce on the enemy. Still, the sellswords were experienced, highly trained soldiers. They didn't falter, even as it was clear the battle had turned against them. Another woman soldier perished, clutching her chest, where her plate was rent. Kristoff flew to her aid, knowing it was too late, but wanting to make her death mean something, meeting his opponent with perfect form, parrying his frenetic, rage-filled strokes with cool, precise blocks, eventually seeing an opening and taking it, disarming him and finishing him off. His opponent died, surprised that he'd been bested, his lips forming an O shape. "Lady Zelda," a voice said. Kristoff turned to find himself clear of the main body of action, facing Mona, Private Shiri. Her face was smudged with dirt and blood, but she was alive. "Give me command and go find her."
"What?"
"I won't fail you, and you won't fail Lady Zelda." Words escaped him. It was as if she knew his mind better than he did.
"I cannot abandon my post," he finally managed.
"You won't be. You will be delegating temporary command to me." He almost smiled. Almost. It was exactly the sort of loophole he liked to use to maintain his honor and loyalty while trying to make the right choice.
"I, Captain Kristoff Metz, do delegate temporary command of this company to Private Mona Shiri until the time when I return or perish."
Private Shiri winced at the last part, but nodded grimly.
"Now go, and don't perish, or I'll kill you."
He was fairly certain it was an exaggeration, but he scurried off just the same. The quickest way toward the prisons was barred by the locked gate into the promenade. Alternate routes came and went in his mind, but all would require going well out of his way. Time was of the essence. He had no choice but to climb the ivy-covered wall. The decision made, he sheathed his sword and approached the task like he approached every task, seeking the most efficient route to the top. The thick, leafy ivy made it difficult to find the best handholds, but he took the extra time to locate them, knowing they would get him to the top with the least risk in the fastest time possible. Behind him, the sounds of battle faded, his concentration consuming everything else. A fall from this height would break his back at best, kill him at worst.
"Don't perish, or I'll kill you."
Private Shiri's, no, Mona's, final words lifted his lips in a wry smile. But they quickly drooped as he felt a shred of fear, something he'd never experienced while trying to save a life. The feeling surprised him. He wanted to see her again, wanted to touch her again, feel her lips on his skin. For a moment he froze, shocked by his own thoughts. A sound from above broke him from the trance. The archer's arrow stared down at him.
"Die, sir,"
the sellsword said. Anise. She squeezed harder, the man bucking in her grip. When he stopped moving, she tossed him aside. Nearby, Dietrich's sword was a tornado of blows, cutting down the three men who'd surrounded him. On the opposite side, Terin slammed the Morningstar into the enemy. A soldier fell and didn't get back up. Sir Jonius, an impressive swordsman in his own right, disarmed his foe and stabbed him between his plates. Archer, still on his feet, spun slowly, searching for his next opponent. Only a dozen or so enemies remained fighting, but now they turned and retreated, heading for the gate to the promenade, which swung open at their approach.
"Company Dietrich, pursue!" Anise said.
Dietrich and his men charged ahead, a step behind the sleeping knights, who had already given chase, blood dripping from their ancient weapons. Lisbeth Lorne was nowhere to be found. Anise scanned the courtyard for Sir Metz and his all-female company. One of the women, Terin's cousin, Private Shiri, approached.
"Requesting orders, Your Highness," she said stiffly. "Where is Captain Metz?"
"Under his orders, I am the company captain until he returns."
Anise frowned.
"You didn't answer my question, Private."
"He's on a mission to locate Lady Zelda."
She shouldn't have been surprised. The knight was as honorable as a judge, and ever since the news of the Brotherhood's attack on Castle Hill, had felt responsible for Zelda's predicament.
"Fine. Secure the perimeter. And locate Lisbeth Lorne."
Lisbeth. Her leg was shattered. Her heart was pierced by a blade. Half her face cut off, an ear missing. She could taste blood in her mouth, hear snarls in her ears. Atop the wall, she was a broken woman. None of the injuries were her own, but she felt them all the same. At Darin, it had been different. The knights hadn't suffered a single injury, had swept over the surprised Easterners like a scourge, decimating them. The sellswords had been ready, fresh, hardened warriors, who, for the first time in their lives, had had something to call their own, worth defending. Though the knights had still been too much for them, they'd been injured. Several had even died. She felt them all. Lisbeth Lorne pushed to her feet, straining from the effort. The cries faded. The pain, too. In the courtyard below, the battle was over. Enemy survivors were fleeing, ducking through a gate which closed behind them. The knights were chasing, as well as Sir Dietrich and his men. Sir Dietrich, she thought, feeling something in her chest. It was an odd sensation, like butterfly wings fluttering inside her, or a warm summer wind passing between her ribs. She pushed the feeling aside and focused. She wished she hadn't. The bloodlust was back, surging like a thick vitriol, filling her throat and mouth with its bitterness. Despite all the death they'd wrought on this night, the knights were not sated. Not until all their enemies' souls had winked out, vanishing like wraiths in the dark sky. I can't control them. The thought was defeatist, but felt true. The desire to sink back to her knees intensified, weariness swarming over her. No, she growled, surprised by the sound of her own voice. Strong, determined. I am still alive. There must be a greater purpose for me, else I would not be here. She only had to find it. Her feet left the stone wall, the earth relinquishing its powerful grip. She was wind, she was air. Various coloured souls passed beneath her, while broad shadowed stretches indicated where the dead lay. Dietrich's pulsing blue soul had stopped at the gate. He was one soul in two lines of them, and she knew they were using the battering ram once more. The angry red souls were too impatient, clambering up the walls like spiders. The sleeping knights. My responsibility. Toward them, she flew. Zelda. Pain blossomed in her shoulder, where a spike had driven cleanly through, cleaving muscle, tendon, and bone. Despite herself, it drew tears from her eyes, obscuring her vision. Not only had Severon had the foresight to dig pits, but they were filled with wooden spears, honed to fine points.
He anticipated my betrayal, or at least considered it a possibility. I was the fool, not him.
The pain in her shoulder was nothing next to the sinking feeling in her gut. She heard the beast's mournful cries, felt their pain in her chest, a weight pressing down upon her.
They saved me, and I led them into a trap.
A scream scraped from her lips as she tried to push herself up.
Ah!
She growled, as the wooden spike slid slightly but held her to the ground. Strong arms grabbed her under the arms and pulled. There was a cracking sound. Spots of fire burst across her vision, and then darkness, the world disappearing as she momentarily blacked out. It returned in a rush as she was thrown to her knees, held steady by those same strong arms. Cold metal bit into her throat as blood leaked from the hole in her shoulder. Sounds assaulted her ears. The howls of the mammothen vanishing one by one by one.
They're killing them, slaughtering them, like so many cattle.
The thud of something heavy against the wooden gate, rattling blows, each more powerful than the last. The ring of steel against steel, as a battle raged somewhere above, on the promenade walls perhaps. And a snake-like voice, hissing in her ear.
If I die, you die.
Severon. She wanted to turn, to spit in his face, to throw her own body upon his blade if her death meant he'd lose his only bargaining chip. But she couldn't, could barely force her own breaths between her lips, each expansion and contraction of her lungs sending shards of agony through her body. Zelda was facing away from the gate, toward the mammothen, forced to watch as a sellsword shoved a large spear through each of their brains, one by one. There were five, maybe six, left. Including Chantilly.
They're saving her for last, she realized,
astounded at the evil of these men. A raucous clangor rang out behind her as the gate burst open.
Stop! Severon shouted. Stop! Or Lady Zelda dies.
Halt!
Anise's voice, strong, unwavering.
She has become the woman I always knew she could,
Zelda thought, with a swell of pride that sent fresh pain to her shoulder. She tried to speak to her niece, but her voice didn't seem to work.
Don't listen to him, Anise. Let me go. You must let me go to save the kingdom. I am a willing sacrifice. What do you want, Severon?
The man had the audacity to laugh, his knife separating slightly from Zelda's skin.
To walk away alive with my survivors. This doesn't have to end with more bloodshed. Oh, but it must,
Zelda thought, spotting something nearby. Something she could use. The same spike that had impaled her, having broken off when Severon wrenched her from its grasp. Summoning the little energy she had remaining, Zelda prepared to throw herself toward it. Anise. Though she was trembling inside.
Not Zelda, please. She is the only family Archer and I have left.
Anise kept her voice steady.
You stole my castle, killed my soldiers, and tried to usurp my throne, and you want to just walk away.
Everything was frozen, the battle between the sellswords and the sleeping knights having paused atop the wall. She was surprised the knights had obeyed her. Lately it seemed they only obeyed Lisbeth Lorne, who she'd spotted flying, across the courtyard. Out of the corner of her eye she watched as the soul-marked girl landed softly on the ramparts.
Good. Then we have an understanding, Severon said. Unless, of course, you'd like to watch as I remove your aunt's head from her shoulders.
I will kill you myself, Archer said, taking a step forward.
Anise moved to stop him with a hand on his arm, but Sejonius did so first. She swallowed, trying to hide her nerves. Not because she feared her own ability, but because she knew sellswords were unpredictable, and Severon more than most. There was no doubt this man would perform such a horrifying act without blinking. But this was not the time to let righteous passion force his hand. Archer looked at her, anger and determination flashing in his eyes, but she shook her head. She turned back to face the sellsword.
You would die a moment later. And yet, Lady Zelda would still be short ahead.
He smiled, the half-mad smile of a man who had nothing left to lose. Anise was about to respond in kind, but Severon spoke first, his eyes darting to the top of the wall.
If any more of my men die, Zelda dies too.
Anise followed his gaze to where one of the knights had disarmed a sellsword, holding him up with one hand. The ancient warrior's eyes were dark and intense, his other arm retracted, preparing to plunge his sword into the man's heart.
Sir, I command you to cease and desist. She said.
The knight's head turned toward her slowly, his lips parting.
I obey the will of the North, and the North alone. These men have threatened the kingdom, and they must die.
His grip tightened on the hilt as he brought his blade forward. Lisbeth. Lisbeth strained against the knight's will, halting his sword's progress. His red soul brightening in surprise as he twisted his head to face her. He continued to hold the sellsword aloft in one hand. The man's soul was as black as a shadow, almost as if he was dead already, and she knew he deserved to die. But not at the cost of Anise's aunt.
No,
Lisbeth said in the knight's head, trying to burrow down into his soul, which seemed to descend deeper and deeper, a pit with no bottom. Something struck her, a truth. The reason the magic of her mark seemed powerless against the ancient warriors.
Because they're old, she thought,
suddenly making sense of the senseless. Their souls had seen more, entire lifetimes of nothingness spent in hibernation in the frozen hinterlands. She had to wade through all of that empty blackness to cut to the core of them, where their greatest truths lay hidden, covered by centuries of dust. She burrowed deeper, remembering when an entire Ghazi army threatened her on a snowy hillside, what seemed like a lifetime ago. Though she still felt awful about what she'd done then, she had done it. She'd brought them to their knees, touched all their souls at once. Concentrating, she tried to recreate that power, felt it coursing through her like a wash of flames, her forehead on fire. She pushed farther into the night's soul, seeking the core, the bottom of that pit of darkness and time. She thought she saw a light, winking in the blackness.
"I can do this."
The night pushed back, spikes of pain pricking at her body from all sides, and Lisbeth realized it wasn't just this night she was facing, but all of them. It was like poking a beehive with a stick, angering the entire colony rather than just the single bee you happened to hit. Their collective voices roared in her head, drowning out everything else, driving Lisbeth to her knees once more. Hidden somewhere amongst the cacophony was the knight's intention, working its way from his brain to his shoulder, to his arm, to his hand, to his fingers, which began to open.
"He's going to drop the sellsword from the wall," Lisbeth realized,
a beat too late. The dark soul fell like a dropped stone, his scream as bright as the sun. Zelda. When the man screamed, Zelda lunged for the spike, feeling Severon's blade slash across her, slicing open her skin. Warm blood ran down her neck as she curled her fingers around the spike. If Severon didn't kill her first, she would end her life herself. Sunlight reflected off something metal atop the wall, staying Zelda's hand momentarily as she tried to discern its source. And then Severon was upon her, his knees punching the remaining breath from her lungs, his lips an angry snarl, his scarred face twisted with rage. He raised his blade for the killing stroke. She saw the source of the light, a familiar knight in shining armor, deftly leaping from the wall, the path of his arc drawing a definitive line toward her. She tried to roll, but couldn't. Severon's weight too much, even as his arm slashed downward.
Whoomp!
The blade whistled past, as Sir Christoph Metz slammed into the sellsword leader, knocking him askew. Zelda got her foot in the face, filling her vision with stars, which twinkled, slowly faded, and then vanished into darkness. She could feel the blood leaving her body, pooling beneath her. She felt warm, as if wrapped in a cocoon. This was good. This was right. Anis had won back her kingdom.
"Rule with honor. Save the kingdom."
Her thoughts slipped away from her like the fleeting tales of comets disappearing into oblivion. Christoph. After the one atop the wall, the archer who'd had the high ground and the element of surprise on his side, he'd swung sharply to the side, the arrow zinging past his ear before grabbing the man's bow and pulling him off the wall. Christoph had had to defeat three more sellswords in order to sneak along the wall to gain position behind where Severon held Zelda at knife point. He'd planned to clamber quietly down the wall and surreptitiously make his approach, but everything had moved so fast that simply wasn't in the cards. As a last resort, he'd thrown himself from the wall, judging the distance as best he could. If he'd over or underestimated, he would have broken his legs. Instead, he'd probably broken Severon's, while the sellsword leader had broken Christoph's fall. Now, Christoph clambered to his feet and pointed his sword at the man's throat. He was groaning, writhing on the ground, clutching his own legs. The remaining knights and soldiers had swarmed the rest of the sellswords, killing or capturing them. The one who'd been methodically murdering the Mammothen herd swiftly dropped his spear and surrendered. Christoph wasn't sure whether any of the regal beasts had survived, but he hoped so.
"Kill me," Severon said.
When Christoph hesitated, the man screamed,
"Do it!"
Something about this pathetic man's end made Christoph uncomfortable. How far would a man have to fall to wish for death? He'd lost his own brother, and yet he'd never considered suicide, nor asking someone to kill him. He shook his head.
"Your life is not in my hands. Not anymore."
He stepped aside for Queen Anis Gehrig. Anis. Anis held her Evenstar in one hand, the spiked ball hanging loosely from its chain.
"You threatened my family, my kingdom," she said, feeling cold inside at how close it had been.
Nearby, one of her healers was tending to Aunt Zelda, having already determined the loss of blood was grievous, but that it could be stemmed. Archer supervised closely, helping to put pressure on her wounds. With rest, she would live.
Thank the frozen gods of the north, Anise thought. And thank Sir Christoph Metz.
Severon spat blood, still clutching his knee.
I did what I had to do to get what I was owed. My entire life I fought for lords and ladies, kings and queens. People like you and your aunt, your uncle and cousins, your father and mother.
Don't speak of my family. You know nothing.
You fought for yourself, for gold. You are a worm beneath my trod.
He laughed, his teeth stained with blood.
Then be sure to wipe my slime from your throne before you sit in it.
For your crimes against the kingdom, namely treason of the highest order, I, Queen Anise Gerick, first of my name, sentence you to death, to be carried out immediately and swiftly.
Madness consuming him, Severon laughed the entire time, until one mighty swing of her Evenstar silenced him with a crunch. She threw down the weapon and turned away, wondering whether this broken world could ever be truly fixed.
Not as long as evil men like Severon are alive, she thought.
Someone stood in her path, and she tried to push past him, but thick, long arms circled her, pulling her into an embrace. She looked up into Terran's eyes, which were his and only his, rich pools of warmth, fierce but compassionate. For the first time since she'd known him, the monster lurking inside him had been absent during a battle. She wondered what it meant.
"It's over," Terran said,
leaning down and kissing her forehead. Her gaze slipped past him to where Lisbeth Lorne stood watching from atop the wall. Anise recalled how her blue eye had burst to life, how she'd stayed the knight's hand, and then how he'd defied her, dropping the sellsword from the wall. If not for Sir Metz's swift actions, it would have sealed Zelda's fate. Lisbeth's milky, unseeing eyes fell to her feet, as if unable to meet Anise's stare for a second longer. She turned away.
I'll need to talk to her later, she thought.
Something told her their troubles were far from over. 11. The Southern Empire, Citadel. Rhone Lorraine. Though Lady Windy had suggested Rhone get some sleep before they spoke again, his thoughts wouldn't allow rest.
Bear Blackboots was here, just like I thought.
The truth had him buzzing, like he'd drunk too much of Windy's tea.
Maybe there's still hope for the Four Kingdoms. Maybe Bane is wrong about everything.
He had to believe it, otherwise everything he'd done so far was for naught, his life forfeit.
You should be sleeping, Windy said, startling him.
Lost in his thoughts, Rhone hadn't even noticed her enter. Rhone propped his head up on one hand.
What does it mean? He asked.
Windy cocked her head to the side in that bird-like manner of hers. She didn't smile, and Rhone could sense a fear in her he hadn't felt before.
You mean Horde?
Yes. Rhone nodded. At first I thought Horde was us. You know, the armies of the Four Kingdoms, killing each other, destroying everything.
That makes sense.
Rhone shook his head.
Now I don't know. It felt darker than that. War is dark.
You've never read about Horde in any of your books. Windy laughed.
Scholarship isn't about being given answers in books. It's about discovering them for yourself.
So you're saying you don't know? It was a light-hearted jab, but Rhone couldn't help himself.
No, Rhone Lorraine, peacemaker of prophecy and legend. I don't know. But I suspect the answer, along with many others, lies in Terragon.
Then we must go there.
Yes, and we must go with you.
We?
Yila and I. Most believe peace is the work of kings and their armies, but it is scholars who can change the world.
Rhone considered that. Considered something else, longing to ask the question, but fearing the answer.
Is Bane right about me? Are we part of the same fate? Am I the light to his dark? Do I need to work with him to achieve peace?
He clamped his mouth shut, opened it.
What of Caleb?
Windy smiled without humor.
The fate of Calip has never been mine to determine. Viper might be a bitter snake, but she wants what's best for our people. There comes a time in life when it's necessary for one to walk away from everything they've ever known. For me, that time is now.
Roan nodded. He'd had a time once, too, when he'd left Calypso. His life hadn't been the same since, for better or worse. When do we leave?
Immediately. We shall travel on Guanic back.
Roan groaned. 12. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Rhea Loren. Rhea was powerless against the strong arms pinning her to the floor, the stones icy through the thin fabric of her silk shift.
"Where are my clothes?" she wondered,
even as she tried to fight off the woman who held her. She remembered,
"They took them. They stripped me down to this."
A scream rose up from her lungs, but lodged itself in her throat, choking her. The two furies holding her bared their teeth, which were stark white next to their long red hair. The third stood over her, hurling accusations in that cold, even tone that marked her as a servant of wrath. The edge of a blade caught the light, a flash of silver death.
"I am powerless. I have no control."
Control. That word. It was the key to everything. To life, to death, to happiness, to driving away her enemies. Again.
"I am powerless."
The knife darted down, pressing against the skin of her cheeks. She felt its bite, the warmth of her blood flowing freely. She wanted to close her eyes, but couldn't. She saw the fury.
"No! Oh, wrath! Father?"
King Gilderen stared down at her, his expression sad. He began to cut.
"Father!"
But no, her assailant wasn't her father anymore, but her lost brother, Roan, his long golden hair falling across his brow in waves. Grey Aris was next, and she remembered how he'd protected her to the end, just before he'd left. Her chest felt ripped open, her heart exposed, a lonely thumping thing with no purpose, no control over its own destiny. Dimly, she was aware that this was a dream, no, a nightmare, one that had recurred again and again ever since the day where she was scarred. And yet she couldn't bring herself to end it with a scream, the way she normally did. For the first time, there was one more person left to hold the knife, to cut, to scar her. Leo, her younger brother. She could see the anger in his narrowed eyes, in his white-knuckled grip on the knife, in the way his teeth knit together, grinding.
"Leo, no!"
she tried to shout, but her words were caught behind that frozen scream. And then B was dying all over again, and she was powerless, her life spiraling out of control, and all she wanted was to return to the old days, when she was just a rebellious maiden, and her father was the king, and B was alive, and... She screamed, shattering the dream world, thrashing so hard her silken sheets wrapped around her, tightening. She choked, gasped, breathed, stopped fighting. Counted to 10, then to 100, in rhythm with her racing heart.
"Just breathe."
She did. She breathed.
"It was just a nightmare, and the past is the past."
It was something she'd been reminding herself of daily, in an attempt to be a different person, not the monster she'd become ever since the day Cousin Jove had condemned her to a fate she never wanted. The control was an addiction, a part of her she couldn't cut away like a piece of fat attached to tenderloin. One of her tutors had once told her about an odd lizard in Fanes that could be cut and regrow. A tail, a limb, even its head. The only way to truly kill this lizard was to burn it to ash. It was like that with her need for control. No matter how much she fought it, strove to cut it off, that need would regrow, driving her to do mad things like what had happened to her sister in the Bay of Bounty.
"I will have to use fire to slay my own monster," she thought. "Burn it to ash."
There was one more thing Rhea had to do before departing Night's End. Rhea hesitated in the shadows of the doorway, watching her brother Leo as he stared at the wall.
"What is he thinking?" she wondered.
What is he seeing? Memories of his twin sister's final moments before Rathos dragged her screaming from the shore. Rhea's cold, uncaring face as she pretended she felt nothing.
That was what plagued her more than anything, that Leo thought her a monster. Sometimes she agreed with him. Her baby kicked, its timing uncanny. Once she might have believed nothing mattered but controlling her own destiny, protecting herself from ever being hurt again. But now... now she wanted the child to have a mother to be proud of, not a monster.
"I am not a monster,"
she whispered under her breath, willing it to be true. Leo turned at the sound, his eyes sunken, dark circles under them. She wondered how many sleepless nights he'd had, how many times he'd been woken by nightmares of her. She took a deep breath and entered, hating the way her brother flinched when she moved closer, hating that it was warranted. How could she explain that she never meant for B to be killed? How could she explain that she was as much a victim of Roth's will and whims as him?
"I'm going away for a time," she said, her voice quivering slightly on the last word.
Once, not so long ago, she would have hated hearing that weakness in herself, would have tried to hide it. Not now. Not with Leo.
"You're going to war," Leo said.
He sat cross-legged on the floor, his head angled slightly toward her, but not making eye contact. His voice was flat, monotone, without feeling.
"He doesn't care whether I live or die."
She didn't blame him. Couldn't blame him.
"Who am I?"
she wondered. The girl who murdered her cousin, Jove, as he forgave her sins, or the queen who faked Ennis's death to save his life? The brave warrior who saved her kingdom in the Bay of Bounty, or the petty sister who caused Bee's death because she wanted to scare her? The vicious ruler who sought to poison an entire species, or the mother who saved all of the Four Kingdoms from Darkspell's plague potion? She realized Leo was staring at her, that she'd been silent for a long time.
"I don't want you to," she swallowed. "Hate me." "I don't hate you,"
Leo said, too quickly, far too quickly. He was never a good liar, not like B had been.
"He's scared of what I'll do to him if he says the wrong thing."
The thought made her unbearably sad.
"It's all right,"
Rhea said softly, taking a step closer. Leo leaned away, eyeing the dark space beneath the bed as if seeking an escape route.
"I deserve it. I've done bad things. Too many bad things. But I'm trying to do right now. I'm trying to be better."
His eyes remained fixed on that dark space. He said nothing.
"I didn't kill Ennis, you know," she said.
At that, his eyes roved back to her before darting away again.
"Everyone says you did. You stabbed him in front of the entire city. It wasn't real," she said. "He wore a bag of blood on his chest. He was given an elixir that made him appear dead." "Then where is he? I want to see him."
She shook her head.
"He's in Fane's. That's why I must go to war. To get him back. Is B alive, too? Was that staged as well?"
The naked hope in his voice, the way it rose toward the end, shattered what was left of her heart.
I didn't mean for that to happen. I only wished to prove the stories about Rathos. And scare you."
Yes, she'd wanted to scare them into obedience. Even unspoken, the truth tasted bitter.
"But it did happen,"
Leo said, his eyes suddenly wild, his hands roaming over each other.
"She's dead, Rhea."
His voice broke on the last word, the tears streaming freely down his face. She went to him. Any facade of strength she had left broke as she held him, as they cried, as they mourned their lost sister, their dead father, the mother they'd barely known. After a time, Rhea dried her brother's eyes on her dress.
"Your eldest brother, Roan, lives. and I'm going to find him."
Until she said it, Rhea didn't know it was true, but now it felt like the most important thing in the world. Her next words surprised her even more.
"We're going to be a family again. You, me, Rhone, and my baby. You're going to have a niece or nephew."
The spring mist hung low, clinging to the streets of Night's End, painting the city in ghostly shades of grey. Despite the hour, thousands thronged the main thoroughfare to watch the army leave the western capital. Most wore white, their god's symbol of purity and righteousness, but each citizen included an article of red, Roth's colour of vengeance, as worn by the Furia. A red bandana tied around a head here, a silk ribbon wrapped around a wrist there. Atop her white horse, squinting through the mist, Rhea saw them all, wondering how she had earned the respect and trust of her people, wondering whether she deserved it. Her thoughts strayed back to Leo. She'd sought him once more before she'd left the bounds of the castle, but he'd already left his quarters, having risen even earlier than she. She was surrounded by many of the Furia, though more would join her as they approached the Furium, which they would pass on the route to the southern gates. They stared straight ahead. In the foggy dawn light, their red armor appeared painted with blood.
"Appropriate," Rhea thought grimly. "I've seen so much blood lately. Too much. Far too much."
Her horse slowed unexpectedly, and then eased to a stop. Beside her, the furious horses did the same. Something blocked the way forward. Attenuated shadows shifting through the mist. A mob, filling the width of the street. To the right, Rhea could make out the fuzzy edges of the structure known as the Furium, the training grounds for Roth's holy army. Though this was where the two halves of her army were meant to come together, something felt off. Figures shifted forward, materializing with each step. One, two, three. Several Furia moved in behind them. Rhea frowned.
"I was told you left the city."
"We didn't." It was Sai who spoke, her eldest living cousin. He looked older, somehow, his chestnut hair streaked with grey. He wore silver armour, a longsword hanging from his belt. His hand gripped the hilt, as if ready to draw his blade in an instant. Flanking him with his brother and sister, Wheaton and Gaia. Wheaton seemed distracted, scanning the crowd, which had gathered to watch the exchange. Gaia, once rather close with Rhea, almost as close as Ennis, stared at her with her piercing green eyes narrowed. Ennis's siblings, all three.
"I'm glad," Rhea said. "Thank you for coming to see me off. Or are you planning to ride with us?"
"No. We are immune to your silver tongue, cousin," Sai said. "Where is Ennis?" It was then that Rhea noticed another, smaller figure standing off to the side. He shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot.
Leo.
In her attempt to get her brother back on her side, Rhea had unwittingly admitted to a lie of epic proportions. She'd trusted him, and he'd betrayed her. Just like B. Anger rushed through her like a rogue wave. Commands lingered on her tongue, sharp words meant to hurt, to destroy, to control. She could easily deny her brother's claims, order her cousins and Leo arrested, thrown in the dungeons. Nothing had to change. She'd survived thus far with strength, with fearless, brutal action. A child shifted, perhaps rolling over in its sleep.
"I don't want to be that queen, that person, anymore."
"Where is Ennis?" Sai asked again.
"I don't know," she said.
Sai's eyes widened in surprise, which made Rhea realize something.
"He thought I lied to Leo about Ennis being alive."
The thought made her feel horrible, because he was right to think that. Ever since her face had been mutilated by the Furies, she'd maintained power with lies, murder, and fear, all under the guise of righteousness.
"You admit he's alive?"
It was Gaia who spoke now, and her eyes were also wide with wonder. No, not wonder. Hope. Rhea had never considered how badly Ennis's death would hurt the rest of her cousins.
"I have been blind for so long. Too long." Yes, she said,
the word seeming to knock a large weight from her shoulders. Several gasps arose from the crowd. Whispers ran through the throng, like the rustle of leaves blown by a stiff wind. The words felt like the held-back waters of a dam exploding through a hole as they rushed out of her.
I faked his death. I lied. Ennis disobeyed a direct order from his queen during a time